I'd like to call. We don't have an agenda for this.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Right on
top. Call a special meeting to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
President Tetro?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Not
here.
Okay, so what the roll recall, Director Steele is not here, but he's supposed to be late. Okay, any public comment? There is no public, so I will close public comment. I will open closed session. Open session, closure of the closed agenda.
That would be me, sir.
That would be you.
Thank you, Mr. President, board members. The board is now adjourning in the closed session regarding action items D1 and D2. The following are the facts and circumstances regarding closed session item D2. The district has received a claim dated March 28, 2013 from Kuiper Development regarding an objection to the water and wastewater fees that are being charged to it, including a payment, a notice of payment under protest regarding tracts number 9322 and 8828. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Well,
okay.
Wait, let's do that one first.
I just don't have my handgun. I may not have my shotgun.
Okay, we're ready? We're going to return to open session. From closed session.
Thank you, Mr. President. Board members, the board has reconvened from closed session regarding action items D1 and D2. The entire board was present with the exception of Director Steele, who is absent. At this point in time, there is no disclosable action regarding item D1 in regards to item D2. By unanimous vote of the directors present, claim by Kuiper Development has been rejected. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, we will now adjourn until 7 p.m. for our regular meeting. I'd like to call the Discovery Bay meeting to order. If you'll all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all for coming. All five of you. And
one again, roll.
Yeah. That's the saddest part. Roll call, please.
President Tetro?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
We'll let the record reflect four directors here. We're going to go to public comment. Public can speak for 3 minutes on anything that's on the agenda. And we'll go from there. Any public comment? Hearing none, I'm going to close public comment. Any presentations?
None this evening.
All right. We're going to go deep. President's report and director's comments. Director Pease, any comments?
I don't have any major news at this point.
Okay. Director Simon? Okay.
I do not have any.
Okay. Director Simon and I did meet with the budget subcommittee yesterday.
Yeah.
You're going over the budget again today, so that's all I have.
I do want to report that the three of the board of directors went to the ALMAC meeting last week.
That's correct.
Enjoyed hearing what's going on in our surrounding areas, as well as a report about what we're doing here in Discovery Bay, and several reports from some of the agencies that serve our area. And it was they were good tamales, and I enjoyed it.
President, if I may, you want to change the roll call count? We are fully.
We're back.
Director Steele is here.
Has arrived. Thank you for joining us. And any comments?
Dr. Sutton?
Yeah.
I attended the school board meeting on May 9th, and just they were in the process of seeking out a new superintendent of Byron Union School District, and also there is a new vice principal at the Excelsior Middle School, I don't recall his name right now, but he was a, he's a local. He's out of Brentwood, and he's been serving in San Ramon and Mountain House School District areas, and now he's coming back to this area. So it was a superintendent. Search is going well, though. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, no more reports. We're going to go to new business. We're going to start.
Consent
calendar. Oh, with consent calendar. Thank you.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Need a second on that?
Second.
All right.
Couple questions.
Okay, what's your question?
The question is.
You need to pull it if you want to have a question.
Okay, let's pull off the
and we'll talk about
invoices.
Okay. We're going to pull off.
E2.
Item.
Let me change my motion. I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar with the exception of item 2, which will open discussion.
All right.
We accept that.
Okay. Any comments on item 1? Anything in the audience? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, now please bring up your questions.
Yeah, the question I had is it's reoccurring, and there's no ill will intended, but legal fees for these invoices are $17,000, and they're from January and March. And here we are in May. So my question is, how come we're so late in getting the invoices to us?
Sir, I know that the January invoice, for some odd reason, left our office in a timely fashion. For some reason, it didn't make it here. When we inquired about it with your staff indicated they had not received it, so we resent January invoice.
And there were some from March also.
The March invoice is for, the invoice is for time incurred in March. Typically, those invoices don't go out. For, as an example, March time would not go out in an invoice until the April invoice.
If I may also, this is one of those invoices when it comes in, there's a lot of detail. And so it gets circulated verified by the different managers to approve. So sometimes it takes a little longer, might take an extra meeting cycle to get through that. But if you do look at the one for March, for example, it's the invoice date is April the 15th. And so that would be consistent with that, not getting that to us at the last meeting, which would have been the first meeting in May, as it worked its way through the process.
All right. Yeah, the reason that I asked is I'm just trying to get a handle on the services in the accounting form, and I'm assuming some of these are, you know, there was some related to the community center, and I was under the assumption that we had all that legal stuff taken care of. So I understand the answer, so thank you.
Okay. Can I get a motion on item 2?
Move to approve the invoice.
Second.
Any comments for the audience? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much. I'm going to go back to the new business. Item 1, consideration for the fiscal year 2011-12 draft audit.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm pleased to be able to present to you the draft of our FY 2011-12 audit financial statements. Croce and Company representatives are here tonight, Mark Croce and Pauline Sanguinetti. We are sitting at her table, as Director Graves noted earlier. When they are here, they take over the spot and do their field work. So I'm not sure which one of you is going. Pauline is going to go ahead and give the presentation. Mark's going to give a presentation, and he's going to go ahead and go through the items for the audit. And this will be coming back to you for final approval at the next board meeting.
Perfect. I'm going to try to go through this relatively quickly, and I'll leave time for questions because I know this can get a lot of numbers and a lot of information, and I know you had it ahead of time, so I don't want to take up too much of your time this evening. If you do want additional detail, please let us know. I'd like to start by letting you guys know we've completed our audit for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2012. I realize that it is now May of 2013, and I want to let you know that we are working as time has gone on. I think the district is very much working to improve its accounting functions and get things more on time. And you know, we still have accounts with the county, accounts that are accounted for here at the district, which takes some time to be able to accumulate the two sets of information. Those are like lighting and landscaping districts, the sewer district, accumulate them together. In comparison to other governmental agencies, this is not uncommon. In a for-profit world, we'd say this is takes a long time. In a governmental world, we're probably about norm of where things are. We did make sure your special district financial transactions report, which is due to the state of California, was timely filed. That does not require audit. Those are compiled numbers. That was timely filed back in October of 2012. So that is filed on time, takes us a little time to get through the audit, and we'll explain to you more as we go along why that does take some time. But as we flip in, we can go right into the auditor's report. That is on page one. This is the highest level of assurance we can give. It is an unqualified opinion. It is indicating that everything we're finding in the report is accurate. We do not have any adjustments that have not been accounted for, and we did not have any items that we need to come back to this board to say where we have issues that would be management point type issues where we'd have to talk to you about internal controls. So highest level of assurance, it's a nice thing for us to be able to be here to say that. Not every government agency would be able to get a report like this, so it's a tribute to your staff and how things are working through. In the management's discussion and analysis, this is really the section that I think most of the public would focus on. We have put in here, you know, all of the required information that is required by the accounting rules. You know, this is really the district's pages where they could add more detail if they wanted to, but we'll go through some of the financial highlights. The district's net assets decreased by $467,895 over the prior year. This includes a $92,827 increase in the net assets of governmental activities and a $560,000 decrease in net assets of business type activities. What does that mean? The $92,827 increase in your governmental activities are your governmental funds. And this is on the accrual basis of accounting, the full accrual basis of accounting. So that's your community center, your lighting, landscaping, etc. The $560,722 decrease in business type activities relates to the activities of your sewer and water funds. Those are considered business type activities because there are direct charges for services within those funds. Total assets of the district was $42,520,757, with capital assets being $34,086,069. Net of accumulated depreciation, obviously, like most governments, your main assets are your sewer and water infrastructure, lighting and landscaping infrastructure, etc. Total liabilities, very, very light. Remember, this is as of June 30th, 2012, before any borrowings on the new financing authority, only $870,472 outstanding. Long-term liabilities of $29,538, other current liabilities of $840,000. Primarily, I mean, this is a young organization. This is unheard of. I mean, most governments have much more debt than that. And you have to remember, we're from Stockton, so this is assets of the district exceeded liabilities at the close of the most recent fiscal year, $41,650,000. Of this, $7,564,000 was unrestricted, could be used to meet any obligation. $34 million is really tied up in your capital assets. This is where it gets a little confusing. On the current financial resources basis, this is the modified accrual basis of accounting. We have to do our statements twice. This is part of governmental accounting. In this case, your governmental funds, your revenues, your expenses exceeded your revenues by $165,000. That's because on this basis of accounting, your capital outlay is considered an expense. So unlike on the full accrual basis where we would capitalize the assets and depreciate it, on this basis of accounting, if you bought an asset, it's an expense. And so therefore, on that basis, you did spend, even in your governmental funds, lighting and landscaping and all that, you spent $165,000 more than what you took in. Earlier, I told you it was the other way around. You had more revenues than expenses by $92,000. That's on the full accrual basis where we've capitalized and depreciated the assets. So a little confusing there. At year end, and then on your proprietary funds, which are those business activities, sewer and water, Expenses exceeded revenues by $560,780. Year end, you had $1,922,805 in cash and investments and $6,079,000 in cash and investments to fund your government activities, $6,079,000 in cash and investments to fund business type activities. So that's kind of a good kind of just basic financial highlight. The bottom line is sewer and water spent more money than what came in. On your lighting and landscaping districts, you were doing actually pretty good. If you capitalized your assets, you actually brought in more money even after depreciation than what you, you brought in more money than what your expenses were for the year. Overview of the financial statements, we're going to talk, it talks more about just governmental activities, business type activities, etc. We do talk about on page bottom of page 3 and on page 4, we give you some detail of the just real brief financial highlights. Page 5 is a table that displays revenues and expenses by fund comparing 2012 to 2011. So some of the numbers that I just talked to you about overall are provided in detail there. The only thing again I want to bring out here is you can kind of come in and see, you can trace through and you can see what were my governmental activities in total. In 2012, we brought in $681,307. We spent $624,327. Change in net assets. We had some contributed capital also. And you can compare that to 2011. On the business type activities, you can do the same thing. You brought in $5,502,336. Spent $6,063,058. Pages 6, 7, and 8 are just going through a little more in a graphical form information about the district, about governmental activities, business type activities, etc. Moving. Better whistler than
time
I
for,
thought.
Time for some
clone. Time for me to stop.
Time for clone.
That's right. If we move on to page 11, I know I'm kind of moving at warp speed. If anyone has questions in the meantime, let me know. This is your statement of net assets that's talking in detail. This goes through in detail the assets and liabilities of the district by governmental activities and business type activities. So again, you can see here that, you know, there's the cash and investments, $1,922,000 in your governmental accounts, $6,079,000 in your business type accounts. We can see our accounts receivable net of allowance for doubtful accounts. The only place we have accounts receivable are in your business type activities, sewer and water. We have estimated accounts allowance for doubtful accounts. That is something we're going to talk about a little later. That is a sensitive estimate. We've done our best based upon historical collection ratios. You know, one would think that people will pay for their water and their sewer, because if they don't, they won't have it. Unfortunately, there are people who do not pay for it and we do not collect. So we have made an effort to estimate uncollectible accounts. You do have some taxes that were due to you at the end of the year. This is very common in Contra Costa County. They will, you know, you'll have some advances on taxes where they've actually advanced you the money prior to actually collecting the tax, meaning very small numbers, but $656, $832, technically they can take that back if the money doesn't come in. There's money due to you from other funds, and there's inventory that you have in the governmental activities. This is some, I believe it used to be mostly like shirts and those types of things that, like, yes, that are, that's just standard inventory. And then you have your capital assets. Accounts payable at this district are very low. You're paying all your bills every month. I mean, so there's just standard activity there. Accrued payroll, the same. Just your standard, you know, year-end accruals based upon the timing of when the pay went out. Deferred revenue, and your long-term liabilities are basically negligible. So you can see at the end of the day, the district has significant net assets. In the governmental funds, it's $3,733,786. Business type activities, $37,916,499. On the statement of activities, which is coming up next, this is actually in your package, since this is a draft. It's on two pages. When it gets printed, it's actually a facing page, so you have to kind of put the two pages next to each other. But you can see how everything works. In your community center, you spent $10,051. You had $2,717 coming in. Net, you were out $7,334. Lighting and landscaping, zone 8, $514,341 is what it cost you to operate that district. You really didn't have anything coming in to help that. Lighting and landscaping, zone 9, $99,000. And you do the same for the water and sewer, cost $6,063. Your charges for service were $5,489. So when you come over, you come to the end and you're saying, well, gee, how does this work? Well, it's showing that it costs $1,194,000 of general money to operate this district for that past fiscal year. So how did you pay for that? Well, you had some property taxes coming in that are under the general revenues, homeowners property tax relief, you had some other revenue, you have assessment revenue, investment income, capacity fees, and other income. All of that adds up to $690,992, leaving you with a deficit for the year of $503,742 for the year ending June 30th, 2012. And that's combined governmental activities and business type activities of the district. Moving on to page 13, we go through the same information. I'm not going to do it again for you. This is on the modified accrual basis of accounting where we don't capitalize assets and we expense them. This is the old governmental accounting, and unfortunately, someone decided that we get to do all this twice, so we do it full accrual, we do it modified accrual to be sure everyone is sufficiently confused by the end of the day. But that's really what it is, just a different basis.
The accounting lobby that had this done, right?
It is, so we have, it takes longer, that's about what it is. But it's basically two different bases of accounting. The subject matter is, the idea is one is long-term focus, full accrual, kind of like a standard business. I mean, it's how we all think about running a business. And then the second approach was the old governmental model, which was really a current resources focus. It was very, almost like cash basis. Money in, money out, very single year focus. How did we get through the last year and what happened? And the criticism of that second focus was that it had no long-term perspective. And so therefore they added this long-term perspective, but they didn't get rid of the short-term perspective. So it's short-term perspective, long-term perspective, both are presented. And at the bottom of page 13, when we do that shorter-term perspective, we are required to reconcile it back to how to the one that's the long-term. So the bottom, you can see how we get from governmental fund balances of $1,905,156 on the modified accrual basis, how do we get to the tie back to the $3,733,000, which is on the full accrual? It's because we have to add in the notes receivable, add in the capital assets, and subtract the long-term liabilities. Same thing's going on page 14. This is just your the income statement, if you will, on the modified accrual basis of accounting. And as you can see, if you look under expenditures, you know, the one big item there is capital outlay. These were all assets that we capitalized and depreciated for the full accrual, but our expenses here, $285,886 in the lighting and landscaping zone 8, and $49,000 in lighting and landscaping zone 9. So that's kind of a primary difference between the two bases. But you can see here your revenues, your expenses, primarily cash in, cash out. Page 15 reconciles back to how we get to the other numbers from on the full accrual. Page 16, we do the same information for your proprietary funds. These are your sewer and water. I'm not gonna go through those in detail, but the sewer and water fund does have significant cash in the bank, $6,079,000, significant capital assets, $32 million, and of course your standard liabilities, accounts payable, accrued payroll, and a small amount of deferred revenue and compensated absences. On page 17, we have our statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance. This is your income statement. Again, accrual basis, proprietary fund. This is on sewer and water. You can see your $5,502,000 of revenue coming in, which is charges for services, reimbursement, capacity fees, and connection fees. And then you can see all of your expenses going out, $6,063,000, for an operating loss of $560,780. In the sewer fund.
I have a quick question, just yes. So I'd understand. On expenses there, you have professional fees and permits and fees. I'm assuming permits and fees are county permits that we have to go down and get to do whatever.
Correct.
Part of that, in this year, the 2012 year, there was a fine that the district received for a spill that they had at wastewater. So there's a large, I believe $270,000 of that, 241,000 of that, 284,000 is that particular fine. So that's why it's higher in this fiscal year.
All right, under professional fees, is that the?
Professional fees is legal, accounting, consulting fees got put into the professional fees, and the consulting fees were a lot higher in the 2012 year than they were in the prior year. So that all gets lumped into professional fees.
All right.
On the expense that you show for the $241,000, you should also show an offsetting. We collected money for that. That was Southwest Water.
242,034 is part of that. Isn't that included in that reimbursement number?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We are, unfortunately, we can't offset the expense with the revenue. We have to show.
Them.
We have
show
to
show them as
at gross.
Okay, correct.
So at the end of the day, like I said, it is a loss in that fund, $560,780.
On a percentage basis, the ideal is you balance spent what you,
that's correct.
You take, and I understand sometimes how do you know a pump breaks and they didn't budget or whatever, but
right.
You have contingencies for that. As a percentage basis on the numbers you're seeing here, how is that $560,000?
The $560,000 is high. I would say that surprised us, given that there was also an increase in the charges for the year. However, I think that there have been I think the district has made some significant improvements. And in fairness, on our side, we have not. There were a number of projects that were undertaken in the sewer and water funds. And one could have made an argument that there are more items that should have been capitalized and depreciated. From our standpoint, Pauline and I, when we're doing audits, we're usually not looking to try to capitalize a lot of that, because it just has an earning, you have your continued depreciation in the future. And in our mind, it's like, hey, things go out, we're gonna fix them and we're gonna get them up to snuff. And as a government agency, if we've approved the bills and we understand what we're doing, then there's no sense in trying to put some makeup on a pig. We're just gonna expense them out and move forward.
Correct.
And that's what we did here. I mean, if you're noticing in repairs and maintenance, $845,297, and then under contract services, $1,402,573. So I mean, there's some pretty large numbers there.
Hey, Mark, let me ask you this, because that number jumped out at me as well.
Yep.
If the district enters into a contract and encumbers money in one fiscal year, mm-hmm. And it's not spent in that fiscal year.
Yep.
And if it's not carried over properly from one year to the next, while the contract was issued and entered into, the revenue, the money to support that wasn't necessarily carried over from one year. It wasn't rebudgeted, in other words.
That's
so
correct.
Therefore, that's what I see happening here. There were projects that where the funds were not carried over from rebudgeted from one year to the next.
And that's correct. We have to record the expenditure when the expenditure actually is incurred, not when it's budgeted.
So therefore, the prior year theoretically should have been under by a certain amount of money.
That's correct, except for the prior year was not. I mean, it was under budget.
Smaller, it was under budget,
but it was still an overspending, and that's why you guys looked and readjusted your water and sewer rates accordingly. But you are correct, a lot of the projects that are hitting as an expense in this fiscal period were budgeted for last fiscal period, and they were just completed during the year that we're auditing now. And we are required, just because you budgeted for them then, accounting says that's nice, we appreciate the budget, but if the expense wasn't incurred until now, it gets recorded now. So from our perspective and looking forward and in our analytical reviews, we are looking at moving forward with, I think that we're not looking at this repeating itself, we're looking at the fact that the additional revenues that were approved will be covering the expenses on a go-forward basis. That's our hope.
Yeah, that's what it's hoping to do.
Yeah, that's what we're we've asked those questions ourselves to make sure that we want to, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're not, you know, on the spiral going this way.
Downward.
And that's not the case. It's just some projects needed to get done, and they got done, and they're completed, moving forward, and we're doing good. On the statement of cash flows, this is just required for proprietary funds. This is just like a regular for-profit entity. It just shows where your money is coming from and where it's going to. Again, the big item here is in the sewer and water fund, in addition to what went through repairs and maintenance, you also had $591,151 of acquisitions of capital assets for the year. So that's where you can see there in that cash flows from capital and related financing activities. Starting on page 19 are the notes to your financial statements. These are very pretty much the same as last year. I will tell you that we are going to have some updates to this information, and I know that some small changes relative to the lighting and landscaping districts. We've kind of just said, oh yeah, they're here for lighting and landscaping, and Rick has pointed out that no, there are some other activities that are authorized in those funds, including, you know, parks and recreation and things like that. And so we are getting that language updated, so the final report will reflect that those lighting and landscaping districts also can provide park and recreation services. We talk about your fund financial statements. Everything else in here is pretty consistent to the prior year, so I'm not going to go through it in detail. And I'm going to skip us all the way over to page number 27 or 28, where we talk about your cash and investments. Or actually, let me back up and say, go to page 27, and the very last item there where it talks about new accounting pronouncements. We're required now to let the boards know that there is a new accounting pronouncement coming out. It is GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board, statement number 63, that talks about reporting deferred outflows and deferred inflows of resources. So this next year, we will be required to talk to you about deferred outflows and deferred inflows. One may ask, what are those? What is a deferred outflow? What is a deferred inflow? And we try to define it. It's a deferred outflow of resource is a consumption of an asset that is applicable to a future period. So, I mean, they're trying to get us to make sure that we are getting everything in the proper periods. We're not seeing that this is going to have a material impact on this district. You don't have a lot of debt or other items that typically give rise to these deferred outflows and deferred inflows. I know you have some new things coming down the pipe this next year. But we're not seeing a big difference. And as an accounting community, I think we're all trying to wrestle with understanding exactly how this is all going to work ourselves. But this is a new pronouncement, and so there may be some slight changes. We're not expecting anything material to be changing in your statements. On your cash and cash equivalents in note B, you can see that you do have cash and investments in total of $8,001,000. How is that broken up? You have $880,000 with financial institutions, $7,114,000 deposited with the Contra Costa County Treasurer, and you have $6,000 of other investments, which is basically a certificate of deposit. We are required to let you know that you have an investment policy that conforms with the state. We have to let you know on the certificate of deposit that the whopping $6,726, we have to let you know how it's invested, and we have to talk to you about, you know, is it in a rated investment? No, it's just a certificate of deposit. There's a lot of additional disclosures that we have to do. This means this is good. If you ever moved on and had other types of investments, you invested in bonds or other T-bills or government obligations, we would be required to disclose all that. And this disclosure would also require us to disclose to the public if you had any investments in any derivative financial products, a la Orange County from years ago. That would be in here. You do not have any of that. $6,726 in a CD is really your only outside investment. Notes receivable. We do list that you have some notes receivable. Why do you have notes receivable? Well, that was something forced upon you by the state of California. Thank you very much. Under Proposition 1A from 2009-10, they borrowed from you $45,668. We are recognizing that as a receivable. They have to pay it back with interest, and they are expected to do so in the 2012 to 13 year. However, the state can, if it so chooses, extend that out another three-year period, I believe, if they choose to do that. Some districts chose to go out and actually get their money, and then they actually participated and had a financing authority where you borrowed the cash. You know, for districts such as yours where the amount was small, it was not recommended to go through that, so you just have this receivable from the state of California. By law, they can only extend it one time, and then they must pay you, and they will pay you by law with interest unless the law changes. I'm trying to be PC. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? We do have to disclose your interfund transactions. You do have some transactions between your proprietary funds and governmental funds. Those are detailed here. We detail your capital assets in note E, so it's a long note, but it shows everything that went on with all the different accounts with your fixed assets. So we show you how you got from June 30th of 2011 to June 30th of 2012. The district does have a deferred comp plan, note F. It's a 457 plan, and the employee contributions to the plan for the past fiscal year in 2012 were $10,425. We let you know that there are compensated absences. People get paid for their vacation, and we do have an accrual for that of $29,538. You do participate in a joint powers agreement for your insured.
Well, we're on that. I had a question here on what it says maximum accruals. What's our maximum accrual? Is it different for different?
It's based upon the number, you know. I think it depends on your years of service,
right?
On how long the employees have been here, and I can't remember. I think it's 160 hours. I think is the maximum per employee. If you've been here for, I want to say more than, I don't know if it's 5 years.
I
can't remember if it's.
Yeah, there's a structure that is in place.
Floating range.
It's like
it depends. If you're here from one to X number of years, you get X number of weeks. If you're another tier, and then the next tier down. But if I remember correctly, I believe the maximum an employee can carry over from year to year is 2 times their annual accrual. So as an unfunded liability, as vacation is, that's the maximum amount of the district's liability.
Right. So you get to that level, and it's use it or lose it. At that
correct.
Point.
Right. Correct. Okay. That's right.
And that conforms with state law.
Right.
In California, if we can't take it away once it accrues, we can only stop it from getting any bigger.
Right. And that was my reason for my question. I didn't think it was there, but assume somebody's here 25 years and they got 25 years of vacation time and you got a big liability. And,
no.
Yeah. 25 years gets you 12 months of vacation.
Yeah. Now, this district being a younger district is not, has developed most of its policies, which is nice to see, that are much more congruent with the private sector. So that's different than what you see other places.
We should not be killed by legacy cars.
That is correct. Your joint powers agreement is with Special Districts Risk Management Authority. That's just for your insurance. So you do participate through that agency. What that means, though, is you are in a fund that is a pooled account. So, I mean, you are subject, your rates and what you're paying can be subject to a liability that occurs at another member agency. SDRMA is very well managed. They do a very good job of making sure that, you know, they plan ahead and those things don't happen. But we do have to disclose it that way. We do include the disclosure of the coverages in effect for your district. We do have a listing of the governing board at June 30th, 2012. We do have to disclose that there are some commitments and contingencies. As is typical with most government agencies, there can be litigation that is involved in the normal course of operation. It is the opinion of management, and we have concurred with that opinion, that there will not be a material effect to the financial statements as a result of anything outstanding at that time or subsequently relative to the district. We do disclose a subsequent event. On July 1st of 2012, the district entered into a second joint powers agreement, creating the Byron Bethany Public Financing Authority, which I'm sure by now you guys are very familiar with. So that was kind of a very high level. I know I have to try to do it quick, but I'm not.
Maybe a silly question.
No problem.
Under note I, governing board.
Yes.
Jim Madison, term expires December 14th.
That needs to be corrected. It needs to be 2012.
He expired in 12.
Oh, well then we'll change that.
And he's not here. So.
Okay. That's a good one. We did not catch that.
And I got just follow up also on the subsequent event. We created the Discovery Bay Joint Powers Finance Authority. So it was with Byron Bethany.
Oh, because it says.
It was a joint powers formed with Byron Bethany. So we'll have to get the language.
Okay, we'll check on that. Does anyone have any other questions or things we can answer? I mean, it's a lot of information, and I mean.
Yeah, I did have a chance because we got it in time to read through it. I just wanted to comment that I think it's very professional. I appreciate your presentation. Nice, sweet, and easy. And just for my information, because I'm new, how many other districts does your firm kind of work with?
We work with probably approximately 60 to 70 other districts. We work with probably about 40, well, actually more than that. We probably work with 40 to 50 reclamation districts alone. And then as far as community services districts, cities, and other type entities, probably 25 to 30. We are a one office firm. So most all of our work is Northern California. We don't travel to Southern California to do any work. And then in addition to our work in that area in the government arena, we also perform audits for for-profit entities and not-for-profit entities that probably include another 60 to 70, 80 engagements, depending.
All right, so about 200 clients.
Yeah, and our firm is full service. So people like Pauline that do the audit work primarily focus on audit work and do that all year long. We're not a tax season. We do taxes and audit season. We're not that. We have people who are doing their audit work or doing audit work year round.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good question though. The last thing I want to go through very quickly is our report to the board of directors. This is required communication under Statement of Auditing Standards number 114. I don't know if this is in your package or not. It's a letter that says we have audited. No?
That's at the beginning, I think.
It might be our report.
It was in the email, but I don't know how you attach it to the package.
Well, nonetheless.
I believe it's the very beginning of the audit.
Oh, it is. Okay.
The very first two pages.
Right. It is.
Great. Well, on that, that's our letter to the board of directors. We are required by our standards to let the board of directors know about things that we find during the audit. And this is some areas where we have to discuss. One of the areas is the qualitative aspects of the accounting practices that we find at the district. So we have to come and tell you, if we came out here and we found that every time we looked, every number was rounded up, or we were trying to cook the books to get to a certain financial result, and that was something that we felt that was happening here, we would need to disclose that to the board of directors. And we're pleased to let you know that that isn't something we found here. We are finding that, you know, the efforts we're here are to record things correctly, do things in an appropriate manner, so that's very positive. We also have to let you know about accounting estimates. We have to say they are integral to the statement. We do have to let you know that, you know, our allowance for doubtful accounts, I mean, it's an estimate. We don't know what it's going to be. We don't know how many people are going to not pay their bill, but based upon prior history, we've evaluated those key components. We've done our best job along with management to determine what that allowance should be, recorded an allowance to ensure that the statements are fairly presented. Difficulties encountered in performing the audit. If we had difficulties that we, you know, well, we could not get through things and things were not prepared and things were a problem, we'd have to come to this board and say, hey, this was a problem. We couldn't do it. We're pleased to let you know that wasn't an issue. We are required to let you know of the corrected and uncorrected misstatements. We don't have any uncorrected misstatements. but we did have some corrected misstatements, and we are required to let you know what those are. We did make an entry of $259,001 to adjust fixed assets. There were some fixed assets that were not appropriately capitalized. We capitalized them as part of our process. Not uncommon for us to do that as part of an audit. There was a $254,502 adjustment into the cash accounts. That was part of what we found during our audits. And then in most all cases, we, the auditors, not our clients, are recording the depreciation expense. So the fact that we, you know, the number pops out, $1,201,846 of an adjustment, you're thinking, oh my God, how could that happen? That's because we are keeping your depreciation and calculating that number and then making that entry as a part of what we do during the audit. In the lighting and landscaping district, those were all in the water and sewer fund, by the way. In the lighting and landscaping district zone 9, there was $35,847 of contributed capital that we had to make an adjustment for during the year. So those were the four items of primary items that we adjusted when we came out and did the audit. Disagreements with management. If we had, you know, if we were having disagreements with management, if we felt management was opinion shopping, saying, hey, what do you think about this? I want this number here. What do you say? We'd have to come and tell you, we're pleased to let you know that is not something that we have. We do discuss items with management, but it is not something where we were feeling like it's an effort of saying, gee, you know, we're trying to get to a certain result. It's just standard discussions that a client and an auditor would have during their normal course of business. We have requested management representations. That management representation letter has been sent out. I believe it may be something that would be approved and signed tonight at this meeting. Management consultation with other independent accountants. If we were being told, hey, you know, we got another accountant out here, they're gonna make this $500,000 loss in the sewer fund go away. You know, if you wanna stay here, you better make it go away too. We would have to come and tell you that that was something we felt was happening. We're pleased to let you know that did not happen. And finally, there were no other issues that we encountered during the audit that we are wanting to report to you tonight. So this is a very positive report. Your district is your district is well managed. You're a young district. You have things going in the right direction for you. You know, you definitely aren't doing some of the legacy, you're definitely catching those things on the front end, which is very positive. Staff is wonderful to work with, and the accounting is continuing to, over time, improve. I mean, this district was definitely a part of Contra Costa County, and trying to separate and do everything internally is definitely something that takes some time. And your district is moving forward very well and getting everything in-house and accounted for correctly here. So we're very pleased, or pleasure to work with, and we wanted to let you know that too. That's not something we get to say all the time.
Good news.
So that's good news.
I have a question. This is on the water sewer fund.
Yes.
The cash adjustment, just so I'd understand that.
Yes.
Does that mean that $254,000 was accounted for like in capital and it shouldn't have been and transferred over, or what was that?
Right. Yeah. No, what happened there was when we came out, without being too nuts and bolts, but the bank reconciliation that was done for the county, it wasn't correct. So we had to adjust that amount to the amount that it should have been. So there was some expenses that we had to increase the cash account because there were some expenses that we needed to remove. So it was just purely a reconciliation item. So we don't normally have that entry. So this just seems like an anomaly this year. Normally we don't really have an adjustment to the cash account.
Right, well that adjustment was up.
Yes.
So
yes.
We had more money in the bank than we thought we had.
That's correct.
But that was due to the fact that Contra Costa County and the changeover was in their department.
Yeah, sometimes things get recorded on the county and then sometimes they get reported here. Sometimes it's because of the whole Contra Costa County is taking care of some information. They're trying to get everything housed in one location here. So it's a little bit, you know, sometimes things get duplicated. So.
All right. But from your view, going forward,
it should be a problem.
This should not happen again.
No. Right. Because I'm confident in that because we looked at the following month to see how they started that month. And their
reconciliation was correct. So after we found this, we did look at the following month to make sure that everything
stayed
was
on track.
As far as the adjustments to fixed assets and depreciation, you may see those going forward where we may be coming in and saying, hey, let's capitalize this asset.
Those, and that's understandable. The cash thing was kind of...
This is the first time we've had that one.
And with regards to the bad debt, we found a way to reverse the flow, which encourages them to pay.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a problem in the future.
I've often said that with agencies such as yours. I'm like, if you just put a valve on the outflow part of it, I'm sure people would
swap
pay
things
very
around
quickly.
A little bit.
Yeah.
You know, they pay really quickly.
Well, if there are no further questions, that's it for my report. I thank you guys very
much.
We appreciate the opportunity to be of service. And if there's any questions throughout the year, feel free to contact Pauline or I, and we're happy to do whatever we can.
Just a question on that. So during the year, since we aren't in the office all the time, during the year when there's questions that come up with our accounting department or with our general manager, do you get phone calls throughout the year saying, hey, we want to just clarify, we want to make sure we're on board, and they look to you for guidance throughout the year on changes in procedures and that type of thing, correct?
That's correct. And we are allowed to do that up to, we are allowed to provide up to 40 hours of that, which we're not even, it's not anywhere near that.
Right.
I mean, we are allowed by our statute to provide up to 40 hours of that type of question and answer. Beyond that, we are not allowed to do it because it becomes an impairment of our independence.
Right.
I'll give you an example. Probably the last time, at least I did that, it had to do when we were doing the vehicle use policy.
Right.
I went to call Pauline, had some questions, wanted to make sure that it was within acceptable standards. She got the information back to me and we went forward.
Very good. That's incredible.
That's how that
thank
works.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pauline and Mark, very much.
On that note, we're
going
to leave.
Oh, yeah, you have to stay for the whole
meeting. We'll open the door for you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to item F2, surplus Discovery Bay Community Center equipment.
Surplus equipment that we have as a result of the Delta Valley Athletic Club moving in. With Delta Valley Athletic Club moving in across the street from the community center, in this board's action, I believe a meeting or two back, when they took an affirmative action to go ahead and cease fitness operations, machines, equipment, that sort of thing at the community center, effective June 30th. So what that did was it left us with an inventory, and you received a copy of the inventory on your desk this evening. It's a number of pages. And so FitGuard is a local company based out of Sacramento, and they did some work with us initially when we took over the facility. Help us evaluate the safety of some of the equipment, make sure it was safe to use, there weren't any liability issues. So we asked them to take that inventory and to provide a list for us with a wholesale and a resale value. There's been a lot of discussion as to what we should do with this equipment once we no longer need it. There's been some members of the facility that use it that have expressed a desire to use it or to purchase some of it. There have been discussions with possibly we have we offer it off, we put almost like an auction, you put pricing on it, different pieces of equipment, and you have the public come in and see if they'd like to purchase it, donate some of it to the schools, and so we have all these different options. And before I move forward with any of them, I want to get the board's direction on this. FitGuard is interested for one of their clients in purchasing some of the equipment. I initially thought it was all the equipment, but it is some of the equipment. They have requested to purchase 10 of the spin bikes for $2,000, as well as a number of the equipment that if you know in the free weight room, most of the equipment in that room for $2,000, also for a total of $4,000. The wholesale value on that equipment is about $2,300, and the retail value is about $4,500. We think the pricing is a little bit low for what they're asking on that. That's the equipment in the one room. For the bikes, we feel that at $200 each per bike, it's a little low. But then again, it's not completely out of line. They're probably worth about $350 to $500 each on the wholesale market. So we're looking at, I'm just looking to you to provide some input as to where you would like us to go. We can turn it in. We can participate in the county auction, where we just turn all the equipment over to them, and they sell it, and then they provide us the whatever proceeds come out of that. Generally, when you do one of those types of things, you're really getting pennies on the dollar. So I'm not sure I would go down that road. So,
do you have a recommendation?
I thought long and hard about it. I think that we should sell the equipment that we have that they're interested in. We have one buyer that wants to buy. I think first offer $4,000. He's not in the room, so I can say it. I think we can get it up, probably closer to $5,000 for the equipment, and I think that's probably reasonable. The rest of it, I think that we, as we should maybe offer it to the people that have been using it, if they'd like to purchase it, offer it out, and whatever we don't sell, we offer to maybe Excelsior School to use in some of their facilities if they would like to use it and donate to the school. Whatever's left over, theoretically nobody wants, and we would dispose of it.
Can I make a suggestion also? We thought about maybe obviously they're going to want to buy $4,000 or $5,000 if they're going to want the good stuff, and they're going to leave the stuff they don't want. We thought maybe about taking a couple of really good photos of this, putting this whole thing on eBay.
Had not thought of that, Director Simon.
I sell a ton of stuff on eBay. I buy a lot of stuff on eBay. You have no idea how crazy people are. That looks like when you walk in that gym, it looks like we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars of equipment. And I'm thinking if photographed correctly, put on or buy the whole lot for the town of Discovery Bay. You make it some guy that comes in, I'll give you $10,000 for the whole thing.
There are companies, and we haven't reached out to them yet, that come in, similar to FitGuard, that come in and they will buy your whole lot. Matt Ellison has mentioned them to us, and haven't approached them yet, but we will. But that's not a bad idea either.
It's painless. It costs $60.
Yes.
Yeah, I would suggest that we look through some other avenues at this point. We have till the end of June to.
I
believe we have time after that. Cause
we're not going to charge.
Well, yeah, we'd like to, but at least it's up and not moved and shoved into a corner while we're doing other things. So I think it's a little premature to make a decision on what the best way to dispose of this stuff is.
Yeah, you could check what those other companies and see what they have to say. I think they can come back to us after that. Yes.
I want to make sure that. When we close escrow on that, do we do the UCC search and do we verify that all those spin bikes are owned or transferred properly? My understanding was it was a citizen out here that owned those. It wasn't a part of, that they were just leaving there for use. I'm surprised that they haven't been given back yet.
There are two bikes that are not included in our inventory because they don't belong to us. Okay. The other bikes do belong
to us. Tim Martin's bikes?
Those bikes are not included in the inventory list.
Those are Tim's bikes?
I don't know who they belong to, but there are two bikes that someone brought in themselves. They own them, and they brought them in so they could ride their own bikes and in the class. The other bikes, as part of the transaction, do belong to us. There's 10 of them, and those bikes are on the inventory list that belong to us.
Yeah.
The only concern I have about donating, say, to the school or something, what happens if something happens? I mean, is there a release that the school could have that the kids fall off and break an arm and we're held responsible because we gave them the stuff? Or?
Any transaction that occurs will be an as-is transaction. Whoever takes the property will be taking it under the condition that it has. It will not be able to come back on you for liability.
All right. And then my personal preference would be to find a company and just buy it all done, over finished, and gone.
Yeah, let them surplus out what they don't want.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think to have FitGuard come in and cherry pick it and leave the junk. If they want the good stuff, fine, you got to take all of it
right.
and let absolutely. Them
Especially
handle
since
it.
They created the value.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not opposed to letting the current residents have a shot at it. Naturally, they would have to pay the, you know, a little higher price, but
yeah,
whatever.
FitGuard's interested in basically two of the four rooms. They're interested in the free weight room.
Sure.
And the bikes in the spin room. Mm-hmm. When you first walk in, all the circuit training machines, mm-hmm. and what's in the cardio room with the treadmills and the
ellipticals.
But if we sold all those out,
yeah, junk
letters. Does anybody want that other stuff? I think we have to think about this as a package deal. You got to take some of the bad with the good. And then let them figure out. They're in the business. They can figure out how to get rid of it.
And the other thing is, we've operated this gym at a loss since we've opened it. It'd be nice to recoup some money and put it back in the bank.
Can we go out to get three bids on taking it away and look at those people?
I still think about it.
You might not get three bids, but we can certainly do
our
best.
I'll give you three companies that wholesale if you need them. I would like list. There's a bunch of companies that do it. So.
Well, if we got lots of options, we don't have to decide.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so yes. That's good enough for them.
Thank you.
Okay. Item three, Newport Point Residential Development.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item is coming before you because I received a phone call last week from John Norborn, the planner on this from the county, and I attached an email to be sent to me as a follow-up. I had asked him to send that to me. Newport Point, as you know, is a proposed residential subdivision over off of Newport Drive, north of our water tanks, on the west side of Newport. It is not in our CSD boundary right now. It would need to be annexed in. It would need to go through the LAFCA process as well as through our process. The project has, I gave you a layout of the site plan for the 67 homes. You can see on there that there's a dog park identified as well as a solar array field. I understand that the solar array field with the county, we're on my conversations with John Oborn, has been pulled off the table. So at this point, I think it's going back to the county board of supervisors in
June 4th.
Well, they've also pulled the dog park.
Well, they haven't pulled the dog park. What they're proposing is to, in lieu of building the dog park, that they receive credit from their park dedication fees of approximately $394,000. If they were to build the park, they would then receive a credit for that dollar amount for the cost of the park, and then they would pay the difference. It's not uncommon to see that type of a thing where a developer come in, they'll build a park, similar to what they did in Ravenswood. The developer built the park, they paid park dedication fees, they got subtracted from that. So,
but that's not how they came to us.
Yeah.
So let's get that on the table first of all. They came and made big promises, and they're reneging on their promises at this point. Mm-hmm. It's a project I'm dead against it to begin with. And to me, we have there's no reason we are not obligated to annex them to anything. They're building.
Okay, but that's not what we're talking about here. But there's been no reneging on anything.
They were going to build and supply and build the dog park.
Where do you have that proposal?
Is that not what they proposed?
It's not.
What they had.
We just talked about this yesterday. Right?
Yeah. No. I know. It was always believed, and that's why the item got pulled from the county board of supervisors meeting. Got pushed back a month due to the fact that there was some question arose as to whether or not the park. The dog park was a community amenity that was going to be constructed in addition to paying the
park dedication fees, correct.
And that was where the rub came in. And so the county has now asked this board's input as to, because if the development does end up getting built and the park does end up getting constructed, it will then end up becoming ours and we will own it and we will be maintaining it, that sort of thing. So. The county's basically looking to us to try and determine whether or not, or to they're asking you essentially what your pleasure would be. Would you want to not have a dog park and just take the the $394,000 in park dedication fees. Would you rather have them build the dog park and pay their fees? Or do you want them and use the dog park, use the fees to pay for part of the dog park, or do you want them to pay the fees and build the dog park?
That's what they promised.
So that's the million-dollar question.
In full disclosure, I received a phone call from a Tom Koch, and I think he's the legal guy, and I haven't met him. He was on the phone. And he was trying to explain their side of the view. I wasn't here, don't know what was promised, whatever. My personal feeling is that they're a little hesitant to say they're going to build a dog park when they don't know how fancy the dog park would be. Certainly, they're trying to get out of, they want to use credit of the $394,000 fee to offset some of this cost. I'm not in favor of that at all. I explained to him what I thought a dog park was, the area, whatever that is, fenced, some grass in there, some gravel or whatever, a couple of drinking fountains. I don't know if you need lights or not on a dog park. No restroom in it, you know, because you're not supposed to be down there for 5 hours and doing picnics in the dog
room. It is a restroom.
Well, yeah, yes, it is a restroom. I got the sense that they would probably be amenable to that. So my personal feeling is that they do a basic dog park and they pay the $394,000 so we can use that wherever we want. Life is good with everybody at that particular point.
The problem is that I don't think that's where we want a dog park. That's a horrible piece of land. I don't think I don't want the land.
Don't want the land either if it's not developed because
But I would like to see them mitigate that dog park by contributing to where we said we were going to put the dog park in Slifer Park and mitigate with those funds to offset some of the costs that we're going to incur when we've already had public meetings and talked about Slifer Park and having the dog park there. That's still on the table as far as I know. I think we're just waiting to find out when we're going to own the park before we move forward with that and use some of those funds then to mitigate the cost of the dog park where we want it, not there, because I don't know.
I don't know. That's good for you. I don't remember that change. I thought that this was an option A or a B. Remember we did a dog park study like a year ago or something, and we thought that Slifer Park or this might be a potential site, but we thought that a dog park was something and the community wanted, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So
yeah. But this land's going to stay wetlands, or it's just going to, what is it going to be?
It's directly underneath power lines. Right. You can't build anything on it. I don't know. We're going to end up with more land than we know what to do with once we get to 12 lots.
But you could put a dog park in it. The dogs don't care if it's a power line.
Yeah, but they could be running through wetlands for all they care, right?
Right.
Well, you could put a dog park if you think that's a good place for a dog park.
Why? Why is it not a good place? I mean, what's the difference? It's like within sight of the park that we want to put it.
Because of access to it? Okay. It's not going to be accessed from Bixa Road, is it? Road.
Well, neither is the one on Slifer.
It's on Newport. You're not driving through. Oh, yeah.
But a dog park needs parking. You're right.
Yeah. It needs parking, and we already have bathrooms at Slifer Park. There's no bathrooms. You already have parking built into Slifer Park.
Didn't you have people protesting that lived there that didn't want it there?
They do.
But we have an option here.
Of course you
do. We have a developer who is in a position that he'll build a dog park for us at no cost. Whether it's the right thing to do or not, I don't know. But he's got some land. To give us the land, I'm of the agreement that the land is useless because it would cost us too much to develop it. Mm-hmm. If we can get somebody to develop it, even if it's a dog park,
just flat.
And he still pays the full $394,000. Doesn't mean you couldn't, if the usage was there, build another dog park somewhere else. I don't know if the city ever has two dog parks, but I don't own dogs. But I would like to see it somehow developed instead of just left. We have an opportunity in our hand, and we just let him get out of it. Don't build a dog park because we don't take the dog. And then take part of the $394,000 and build a dog park out of our pocket. I don't think that makes good sense.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
I think we should take the $394,000 and do whatever we want with it. You know, let him build a dog park.
I'm just looking at this bigger plan here too, and if
if this land, if he goes through with, I think we should get that money. I think that if it's through, for whatever those fees are, that would be good. I'd rather have it come back to the town.
And be used for the community.
Yeah, in the town or the community center or for whenever, but let us use, let the town use those funds.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to let him off the hook for a penny at this point. And his original plans, when they came and they sent the plans, they showed a built dog park. It shows in there. It has a value. And that's what the value should be. Mm-hmm. He pays for the dog park, he puts it in if the deal ever passes, if he ever builds it, which I doubt he will, but if the dog park comes in and we keep the $394 in dedication funds.
I agree.
If he's unhappy with that, tell him to go build someplace else. Yeah.
I think the only thing we would need to do to kind of get them over this hurdle is to get a dog park proposal from them. What is their, what level of pain are they willing to go to on a dog park? Mm-hmm. Show us that, and if we think that's fair and reasonable, then we just make it happen. And again, if the project ever goes through, fine. Mm-hmm. If not,
didn't they already do that though? It was in his plans.
What's that?
The solar field and the dog park were both in his plans.
Well, not, but not.
Then it was drawn out. I thought it was drawn out.
But not to tell you what it is. If you look
at the map that I presented to you, and this is, and this came out of the county document. This came out of the county's mitigated negative debt.
Yeah.
You can see it does say proposed solar array field.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in conversations with John Oborn at the county, the technology that they were hoping for, that they would be able to take the field and be able to power and give a little bit of juice to each of the homes, isn't there.
The street lights?
It's not there. It was to help support the homes.
Yeah, that we're not really.
And so they requested from the county, and I believe that the county said, we will relieve you of that. We'll pull that off the table.
Well, it says proposed.
Is an RV park storage?
That'd be nice. Put them right next to the new houses.
I don't know.
I think the reason I'm asking about the dog park is because when they forecast this project, they put a dollar amount on the dog park because they have to build it and they have to eat the expense. Mm-hmm. So when they
have that information?
I've never
seen the performance.
They had a dollar amount in mind to build the dog park.
But their performers might be, those I would believe would be proprietary.
We can reestablish that by just telling them that, if we all agree here, we are three of us agree, that the communication back to the county is to tell the developer that they need to build a dog park and pay the $394. They get to design the dog park, and we buy off on that design.
Director Graves asked a question whether or not you have the authority. Yes, you have the authority to request it. Ultimately, the Board of Supervisors has the ultimate power
to bless the deal. Yes.
The board is coming to us.
I say get the whole kit and caboodle. If you can get it all, get it all.
Get the solar array and the dog park area.
Well, they won't give you the solar thing.
Forget that.
The Board of Supervisors will eventually make the final decision.
Of course, we know that's going to be.
But they will take this board's
comments
into consideration, and that's why it's before you this evening.
I think Virgil had a comment.
I did. The question I had, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the roads were going to be private in that development. If they are, then the public may have a rough time getting through the roads. You could have a board of directors at one time. Let's put gates there. Nobody comes in because you only have one road coming in that development.
There's a deed restriction on the property. Excellent question, Virgil. I asked John Oborn that exact question last week, and he said that in one of the conditions of approval, that the roads, while private, will never be gated. Okay. As part of the conditions of approval.
So if they're but if they're private, can they restrict? Even if there's not gates, can they restrict activity? In other words, say, hey, this dog park's only for us because it's on private property and you have to come across our roads to go there.
There's a lot of private roads that provide public access.
Okay.
To public facilities.
We can make it part of our recommendation.
I guess the recommendation that I would have then would be, and Dan, maybe you can help me out with this, would be that the roadway, it's kind of hard to read what the road is called, Street A, that there be a perpetual easement for access
to the dog park,
ingress, egress to the dog park for anybody, and nobody that lives there can ever block us out. I don't know what that language would be.
When
okay, good.
When we when D.R. Horton built Ravenswood, or Hoff, who else, and the developers built the area around Slifer Park, did their park dedication funds go to build this Slifer Park?
I don't know. Do you know, Virgil?
No, but I got to believe that they, I bet they did work that deal with the county.
They got the credit back for what they put?
I believe so.
I mean,
because the school.
Because what, my only problem is this. Oh, yeah. Nobody ever came, there was never been any discussion with this board about this item where we ever discussed the $394,000 until tonight. So now we're saying, okay, we don't want you to use what the county's saying you're putting into a park dedication to build a park. We want you to give us that money and build a park.
That's,
and I'm not sure why that's fair.
Because they made the proposal.
They offered it.
They offered.
But they knew they had park dedication funds when they made the proposal.
Correct. Yeah. So they got to pay
those.
So
why didn't you? Well, but how do you know that they didn't intend to use the park dedication funds to build the dog park?
It doesn't matter. We want to recommend.
That's what we're being asked to do.
Well, that's what we're being asked. That's like holding them hostage.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
That's the crappiest development I've ever seen. I hope it doesn't
pass. I don't know, and why I'm not ready to make a decision tonight, is I don't know those details. I don't know whether that was what was intended when they said, hey, we know we have to put so much money into park dedication funds. We want to put a portion of that towards a dog park. We want to put a portion of that.
Well,
we don't have that information.
When they came in.
And it's totally relevant.
And they presented it to us. They're smart enough to know they had park dedication funds, and their exact words were, we're here, their exact words were, and as part of this deal, the solar array, and we're going to build a dog park for you.
Right.
That's going to be our gift to the town of Discovery Bay for building this development.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they had park dedication funds.
Well, I don't, I'm not,
and now,
my
a year later,
not
two,
that clear.
2 years later, it's now we want to use the park.
That's funds. Why 2 years ago, I'm not that clear exactly what the words were.
I went back and reviewed the minutes from the meeting when they were here, and there was, unfortunately, no audio back at that time. It was in January of 2010.
Yeah.
So I don't have the audio of it, I just have the minutes, and the minutes were somewhat vague in the sense that they didn't specifically say, it wasn't a verbatim minutes, it was, they gave a presentation to the board. They came in once and gave a presentation to me after I arrived here, and I couldn't remember if it was at a board meeting or separate, so I went back and looked at the minutes.
Yeah, they came in.
Looked it up, but it was in June, in January of 2010.
Any public comment? Yeah.
If I remember that meeting right, there was no discussion of the $394,000 at that time.
Well, he wouldn't discuss that.
In the documents on this that I've read, I believe they say that this development is going to become part of Zone 61, which is, those of us in the Hoffman developments are currently Zone 61. Which means they'd have to be paying an assessment for Slifer and these other roads and so on in that area, slightly north of this. So that's something that we need to be clarified too. If they're going to be paying that in addition to the 394 and all of this stuff, that would have to be something you guys probably would want to ask for clarification.
The developer doesn't pay those fees, 67 or 68?
No, Zone 61.
61.
But that would be applicable to operating and maintenance costs of any dog park or anything else that's in the area.
But the thought is that the park dedication fees go to building a facility. Zone 61 would go to maintain the facility for an extended period of time, over a period of years.
Right. Yeah. And. It would not go to the town of Discovery Bay. It would go to Zone 61, is what I'm saying. Those assessments. That's just a thought you should consider. The other thing about access is, you're right, the only access they're showing and that they've discussed in the documents was off of Newport. But right at the top of the dog park, there's an emergency vehicle access road that they have to put in. Now, the people that use the park and ride lot to bring their dogs to and let them run around on, which is like 2 blocks north of here, they go up and down Bixler. So it wouldn't really change traffic on Bixler if people were allowed to use that EVA lot up to a road up to a certain point and put a gate in there like Lakeshore has at its bridge. so that only emergency vehicles could go through. And the other people would be stopped there, they'd have to park, they could use the dog park, go back out on Bixler, like they currently do when they go make the unauthorized use of the park and ride lot, grassy area, for their dogs. So that's a thought you might want to put in there, that you know, there's some things here that could be maneuvered if that's where the park's going to be. But I agree, there's no reason that they couldn't build the thing. How much were the amounts on the dog park we were going to put in, Slifer? It wasn't anywhere near 394.
It's two something.
The time for the comments has had to comment on the project itself has passed. So we cannot go back and revisit the emergency vehicle access road, for example. That would have had to have been discussed, and the original mitigated negative deck was out for, I believe, 60 days, and then it was recirculated again. So there was a number of opportunities, and we weighed in under both opportunities and commented on it. So unfortunately, we can't go back to the county and say, well, we want you to look at the emergency vehicle access lane.
You can't go back and say, we don't want the dog park?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't see how you can not, you know, you can say anything you want to, is what I'm trying to tell you guys.
Yes, thank you.
I'd like to try a motion. I'd move to direct staff to convey to the county, who will convey to the developer, that the town of Discovery Bay would like to have the developer build the dog park at their expense, their design, and the park dedication fees will be paid in full.
I'll second it.
Okay, let me amend that a little bit, with the last part of it being that the Town of Discovery Bay Board would sign off on
the design. I'll second that again.
Merge, you have a question? You want to come up?
Yeah, just to make sure that on the design, that the materials aren't something that's really cheap, breaks down a lot.
Well, that's why it's coming back to us.
We have to come and look at it. We could comment on the design. Yeah.
It would have to be in cooperation with
kind of standard town approved standards.
Exactly, yeah. Town approved standards.
Materials and all.
If you go back to the email that's attached to the report, mm-hmm. In the title construction of the dog park, it's very clearly spells out the plans for the dog park will be reviewed and commented by the CSD and reviewed and approved by the Community Development Department. It would need to meet all of those
standards.
They conform to the same standards we're using now.
Yes.
Solid gold faucets.
Okay.
Solid gold pooper scoopers.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Any other comments in the audience? Any other comments here?
Who's second?
Mark. Simon.
Sure, I wait for another motion.
You have a comment?
I just look at that solar array field and I'm just thinking, we have a larger dog park, a little half acre here. This is a tiny ass dog park the way it's set up, and so.
It would change your environmental document.
Okay.
So for clarity purposes, what we're doing is we are not. We received an email from John Oborn, right? Is that what this redacted thing is here?
Yes.
Okay. What we're doing is we're not going along with what he's saying. We are in conflict with what the county is telling us they're proposing. Is that correct?
I thought they were asking for one or two opinions.
The applicant will pay $394,000 as required by county ordinance at time of building. The developer can design and build the dog park and be credited back those costs from the park impact fees.
Right. Well, we don't agree with that.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I was clear on that.
Director Grazer, you are correct. Above that, it does say this is a rough draft of our concept. And
exactly.
Our being county.
So I just, right. I agree.
What does the neighbor want? What does the community want, right?
Okay.
We're the community. All right, let's get through this.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, it passes 3-2. Next. Item 4, discuss creek pond location between... Oh, yeah. Okay. So, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. If you recall, at the last meet or a couple meetings ago, Director Peace had asked that we discuss the creek between our facility here and over the community center. And so, I've been in conversation with Rec 800 regarding this. I've discussed it with our insurance carrier, SDRMA, and I've contacted a biological consulting firm that we worked with in the past, Zettner and Zettner. I've also, in my conversations with Rec 800, they have no problem with us if we wanted to pipe it and cover it and cover over it. And it was originally built in its current configuration. It was originally going to be piped and covered. Mm-hmm. And the owner at the time, don't know who that was, requested that the ponds be there for aesthetic purposes. So we're kind of going full circle on that. In my conversation with Jeff Conway this afternoon, he also indicated that while they don't have any problem if we wanted to go down that road, that they would not participate financially in it. And so not to mean that we couldn't go to their board and ask them to, but that was their initial response. So I'm just looking for a direction of, you know, board input to see where you want to go with this, whether or not it's a hazard, a problem for dangerous situation.
Because I brought this up, I'd like to jump on a little bit. Again, in full disclosure, I had a discussion with Andy Zimmer, just last week about what the church thought about this. They want to cover it up. I also had a discussion with one of the board members of Rec 800, and certainly Rec 800 doesn't want to spend anything. Hey, it's your thing. I said, well, it's your water. Yeah, it's your land. And he goes, your water. Who's going to drown the child? So we need to work something out. In talking with Andy, yes, he had spoken to Rec 800, Jeff, and it appears that, yeah, they would like to cover it up at some time. So this would end up being a negotiation. I was also told that at some point there was a construction project that the church was going to do or someplace, and Rec 800 was given permission because it's their property, their lands or whatever. They didn't have to go through all the EIR and all this stuff for sensitive things. Now, whether it's true or not, I don't know. I've just been told. So my personal feeling is that prior to engaging a consultant to look at this and find out in species and all this stuff, open up a can of worms, we should actually have a discussion with Rec 800 and the church and see if we can come up with some sort of a compromise, some sort of an arrangement to make it all happen. I personally feel Rec 800 needs to participate in it. My personal feeling is that they need to pay 50% of it. We let them build the whole thing because they don't, it's their permits, whatever. We don't get involved. They build the whole thing. They pay 50% of it. The community district pays 50%, and the church is part of that 50%, and we split that 50% with whatever the church's portion, whatever our portion is, and it's done.
I'm not for covering up the water. I think that could be a focal point for the community center, and you know, talking to a lot of the other communities that have water at their community centers, that's a nice feature to have, and it costs a lot of money to build that. I'm okay with putting some sort of a safety fence or having some sort of secure way to keep people from accidentally walking into it, but I think it's an asset to the location right now. I have a hard time without having more public discussion on it, saying we're going to go and cover it over tomorrow, because I don't want to spend money on it.
Well, and I agree with that. I don't want to spend a dime on it, and the fence we have up does comply As long as you have signs of signage and the fence, we're covered.
Well, I know, but a 3-year-old can't read.
Let me ask you this, Bill. You were down at Fremont, and you were on their board down there, and you guys have Lake Isabella down there that you built for exactly that purpose, to have water interaction. What's the difference?
Well, the difference on this one is we put a fence up around it. A kid climbs over that fence and falls into it. You can't get to him. It's way out here in the back. Lake Elizabeth is surrounded by a walkway, and there's people and motion, and it's no other different than any other lake. Also, with the problem that I see here is that the aesthetics of it, in my opinion, are nothing. It's in the wrong location. It's all the way in the back. If we were to cover it over, you could reuse that property for a much better use. I mean, it could be grasslands, it could be all kinds of things. So I look at it as taking something that you can't use right now and is somewhat of a public nuisance, in my opinion, and turning it into, take the pig's ear, making a silk purse out of it. But
lipstick kind of thing.
Whatever. We got the pig, and we don't have any lipstick right now.
Oh, I don't want to spend money on the lipstick.
Well, that's fine. I'm only one. I'm just voicing my opinion. But I'm not in favor of going down the road to spending any money on consultants at this point at all, unless there was a consensus of the board that would like to explore it anyway. And if that's not the consensus, fine.
Let me say, and this might be different now, because some of the information you came up with is different than what I've heard before, and not that I've asked the same questions, but when we built the school onto the church, I was the finance elder of the church, and I was also one of the general managers along with Frank Kramer on the project. And we had to actually plant grasses over there by the back of the lake on our property, natural grasses that were specified, because that was an environmentally sensitive area. We could not build closer to that canal especially to the lake. The canal they didn't care too much about, but the lake they specified as an environmentally sensitive area with sensitive plants, and we had to actually get approval for the plants. And part of the mitigation for us building our play lot towards the ditch was mitigated by the plants that we planted, and you can see them over here at the end of the parking lot. There's tan bark and special grasses that were planted, and they died once, and we had to replant them again, and it was a pain in the butt. But that was all based on the fact that the county told us that it was environmentally sensitive. Now, I will say, when I started working with the church on the current project that we talked, when we split the land with them, I actually had a meeting with the pastor and the building department, Catherine Conservice's department, a gal there, and the consensus was, hey, that ditch has got nothing to do with us. Go talk to Rec 800, which was good news for the church, mm-hmm. right? Because that made that property now valuable because they can cover that over. So there's probably are some discrepancies of opinion there. I agree also, I don't want to in any way ask any questions about the frog that might live there. Because once you ask the question, you end up with Silver Creek all over again,
right.
You know? And that took years to mitigate.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Rec 800 is... that's all their stuff, and they're on a whole different identity. They can do maintenance and upgrades or whatever they want under my information I received and get around that sensitive grass and all that stuff. I don't know if that's true.
I hope you're correct, and that would seem logical, because that was always my argument. But it was an open ditch that became a natural habitat, exactly. Because you never closed the ditch.
Exactly. So therefore, if we were to go down the road of get into a little deeper discussion with Rec 800 to find that out, whether that's true or not, and go down that path, but if there's an agreement to do it.
But all that being said, I don't know whether I want to get rid of the lake or not get rid of the lake. I'd have to go out and take a better look at it. This is the first time we've really
take a look when you get a chance.
The habitat that is out there, regardless of whether it was man-made or natural, exists. The silver frogs or whatever you refer to.
No, it's Silver Creek. They had frogs down there.
Okay,
it stopped construction for like 4 years.
Okay. Whatever critters live in there, they have to be relocated. Exactly. You have to mitigate it, regardless of the fact it was man-made or not.
And you're going to be the first person that walks in, the first person that comes in to protest it, it's going to stop the project anyway.
I'm with you.
I think the other thing you got to look at it is that I don't think Rec 800 is going to spend a dime You're talking about a lot of money. By the time you bring an engineer up, by the time you do all of this design work, they're not going to pick up the tax.
Well, first, and you have to build a culvert, too. I mean, you have to put in some piping.
The piping, and they're not going to pay for it.
Right now, it's just free flow until you get to the road.
What Rick just said is correct. The first person that walks in there is going to go, hey, there's tree frogs in there, and that stops the project. It's going to be done.
Virgil,
I believe
come up to the podium.
It's not like he didn't used to work here.
Yeah, really.
Go back to Director Kevin Graves' comments in regards. I believe because you don't have any storm drains and because of the new Clean Water Act regarding storm drains, you had to build that green area so the storm water, as it came off the parking lot,
went that's right. There.
And so it's like a weir, not a weir, but a bioswale, and you have to have that for that. And now if you eliminate that, then the church has now got to do something else with that water that they have. They got to mitigate for that. And today's laws require you pretty much either a catch basin that captures the oils, the cigarette butts, and whatever, or in a settlement, or a bioswale.
That's exactly, you're right, Virgil. Thank you for, you nailed it on the head. That's what it was. It wasn't because of environment. It was because that was the that was the filter
right
before it got back to that lake.
The Zettner and Zettner, when I spoke with them a week or so ago, my request of them was that he was familiar with the site. He brought it up on their geo device, their geo website, whatever one they use. And just looking at it, he said it will definitely require Army Corps. It would definitely require all the environmental agencies. And so what I asked him to do was, if the board would wanted to do this, would be to just come out, give us an initial assessment. Nothing, I mean, for $2,700, you're not getting a lot. What you're getting is you're getting an initial assessment and some recommendations as to how to possibly clean it up, whether you can culvert it and cover it, that sort of thing. So it's something like this would have to be done at some point anyway, whether or not you want to do it now or you just want to leave it. But at some point in time, when we go to do cleanup work, we're going to have to get involved with Army Corps at some point.
Because Rec 800 is involved in it, I think we have to have a discussion with them and find out what rules that they work under when they're maintaining stuff. Mm-hmm. And that we might find that they have some abilities that we don't have.
They maintain levees.
Correct.
So, but the levees, this isn't the levee.
Well, whatever. We can't speak for them, and I don't know. So I would rather
have.
I was
on that board for 2 years.
Well, and that's fine. But
I think the point that Virgil just made supersedes all this. If it comes down to it, even if you close it up, if the church has to go through the expense of building another way to remove the water, they're not going to get involved in it either.
Well, I don't know. So they want to improve their property. So, but anyway,
I can't see spending $2,700.
I don't want to do either.
So what do we do with this?
I think it's is it dead?
I do have one more comment. I do want to have a safe water area, and I do worry about 3-year-olds and unattended children
they wander off. They're
they
a picnic.
Want, I get that. Ooh, so man. I think that the community center committee and the board's going to have to revisit this on a capital improvement or repair or dealing with the whole water issue. But I think I'd like to walk around it some more and just take.
Yeah, and that's fine. Yeah, I don't think there's a big rush to get this thing done. I just wanted to. I know that there's could be an issue there, and I certainly wouldn't want to wake up and find we had an issue because it's our property now. But I think the community center is the right body to kind of move it along a little bit, but I would recommend that we get in contact with Rec 800 and find out what are their restrictions for doing repair work, and we may find an avenue at the appropriate time, whenever, that they could do something different and have less mitigation problems.
If I can, there's a very fine line under CEQA about what is maintenance and what is a project. And I would be very surprised if putting in a pipe culvert system that was covered would be considered maintenance. So if it is a project, then they too are bound by the state laws and CEQA and would have to go through that process.
Stretch it a little bit. It's gonna the water flow is going to undermine our water tanks over here, and they're going to fall over, so they got to fix it.
Okay, so we're going to move on.
Let's move on.
We're moving on.
All right, no action taken.
No action taken.
We're going to go to. Do you want me to do anything else with this at this time?
None. Nothing. None. You have the direction now?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. G, Veolia report.
Thought we'd never get to you, didn't you?
Maybe we ought to bring them up at the beginning.
That's one by the big city. We pay them a lot of money.
Okay.
He's managed.
We got to suffer through it. Let him suffer through it.
These guys are brutal.
I know.
To look out for everybody.
That's what they call Mr. Hart, Paul Hart.
Good evening, Board and Town.
Hi, how you doing?
Garcia with Veolia Water, the project manager of the wastewater and water treatment facility.
Do we have a microphone on him?
That on?
Is it on now? Is it on now?
Yep.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's better.
Good evening, Board and Town. My name is Roman Garcia with Veolia Water, the project manager for the water and wastewater treatment facility for Discovery Bay. We present the monthly operations report for April. Training. We participated in a few training classes under safety, office safety training, safety compliance based training, West Regional Safety Council call, monthly regional safety webinar. Under operations, Jennifer Bennett attended an internal control webinar. Topics discussed were Sarbanes-Oxley Act purchasing orders dated after the vendor invoice and use of T-cards to pay for transactions requiring a purchase order. It's approximately 4 hours of training under safety and 4 hours of training under operations. Water services. We produced approximately 187 million gallons of water, 2,820 gallons of hypo was delivered. Apologize that I can't see, I forgot my glasses.
Oh, okay.
Why do you use this one here? It's
pretty... No, it don't matter.
Okay.
Well, we could read them. Yes, we just asked for questions.
The table for the 2013 water production is continuing to be built. You can see we're going through April. Water bacterial tests, we took 16 samples and they all were fine. Minimal positive. The wastewater services laboratory analysis, we have the March lab data and the April lab data so you can compare for last month, this month. Under NPDS, we had several NPDS related excursions for total coliform issues that's been ongoing. We had 3 7-day mediums and 1 daily maximum. And just for your information, these were the last ones that have occurred. We've got that under control and we're doing really well. So, as a biological thing, sometimes it takes time, but it looks like we're doing good now. We missed one ammonia weekly sample. That is it's not an MMP item, but everything was reported according to the permit. We performed 9 bacteria samples under wastewater, and 4 of them were positive. 3 of them were for the 7-day medium, 1 for the maximum. The number of active lift stations, 15. The polymer usage was 60 gallons, and there was no SSOs. We had 42.6 million gallons that were received to the facility. Under collections, We didn't flush any sanitary system. We're 100% complete. We'll begin doing that again real soon. And the CCTV is 100% complete also. And that 74 manhole, that's a typo. Mm-hmm. I don't think we inspected any manholes this month or in the month of April. The year to date should be 154. Lift station F had a shaft on pump number one that the coupling failed. We put a temporary fix and we're out to get a permanent fix on that shaft, the coupling for that shaft. Lakes lift station pump number two had a BFD that was installed, but it failed and it had to be returned. MCC troubleshooted the software issues at Newport lift station, and all the lift stations were inspected on a weekly basis for the month. Wastewater maintenance. We picked up and prepared the UV racks. We actually used them. Magna rotor brush number three for plant number one snapped and had to be replaced. We switched the UV channels from UV 3000 to UV 3000 plus. Greenhouse fan motors are drawing high amps. It won't need to be replaced, and we're actually doing that right now. Installed the gearbox on Magna rotor brush number two at plant number two, and repaired the solar dryer A mold, and it's back into service. Underwater, MTC had to troubleshoot the software issues at well number six. Well number four failed. It had a blown fuse. Mm-hmm. Day's generator's been coming out and working on generators. Well number five had to have a coolant pump rebuilt. Under preventive and corrective maintenance, there was 323 work orders completed, a total of 203 hours. We had 15 call outs, one emergency power failure at lift station R. There was 150 regular hours for personnel hours and 68.5 hours of overtime. And then the rest just terms in regards to water and wastewater treatment.
Okay.
Excellent.
Any questions?
No, thank you. How's the staff at full staff?
Yes, we are right now. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know if Rick has mentioned, but Lori's going to be leaving to Rialto. She's accepted a position, and we're recruiting right now to replace her, mm-hmm. another operations supervisor.
Okay. Well, wish her luck.
She'll do fine. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Manager's report?
Yeah, we're going to spend about another hour and a half here going into the budget.
No, we're not.
I'm just kidding. All we're doing this evening is presenting to you the preliminary budget just so you have it. You have a chance to look at it. Last night, the budget subcommittee of Director Simon and President Tetro met with Dean Brightstein and myself, spent about an hour and a half going over it. What's included in the electronic version of what was posted on the website has been updated and revised somewhat, so what you have before you are the latest numbers. What was in there last week that hit was a little bit out of balance. It's now in balance. And so we're working with Bartlewells on the rates, and we might have some really good news, but it's a little premature, but we may not have to do a Prop 218 answer. So that would be really great news if we didn't have to do that. So at this point in time, what I'm going to ask the board to do is we have it scheduled for the June 5th board meeting to kind of get into it a little bit more. And then to adopt it on the 19th. I would suggest, if it's the board's preference, that if you want to conduct a budget workshop, it would be entirely appropriate to do so. We've had budget workshops the last few years and spent some time getting into the details of the budget. So I'm looking to you for direction on that and how you'd like to proceed.
I think we should have a workshop.
I would like to have one.
Yeah. So why don't you post some dates and let's see what would work for everybody.
Make me a proposal.
Well, the meeting is on the 5th. If you wanted to spend time and really get into the budget, I'm not sure you need to have two separate meetings on it. You can have a budget workshop and you can have the adoption on the 19th.
Are we required to publish it twice?
We can do meeting early.
Even if it's a special meeting.
Instead of meeting at 7 o'clock.
I can't. Some of us don't get home.
Six.
Some of us don't get home.
What I'm looking at is, I'll find out the answer to that, but it'll be on there for sure the 19th, because that's when we have to adopt it. The week of, after the 5th, anytime after the 5th and before the 19th, the following week, the 12th, is certainly reasonable. It's a Wednesday. It sticks with the Wednesday meeting schedule. I don't know what everybody's calendars are. So I know Director Graves is feverishly looking at his three different calendars that he keeps.
I can try to figure out why I can get Google Earth to work, but I'll only look at my calendar.
The 12th should be all right, I think.
12th works for me.
Just what time are you thinking about?
You talking about June?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be your discretion.
I'm gone that week at Chaplain's Conference. Camp slow.
Well, can't we have in detail our discussion at a regular meeting on the 8th?
You mean on the 5th?
Or whatever our next. How many
items
are? You
can. It's going to be. We have a really. I recall looking at the agenda forecast, our agenda forecast for the 5th is a really heavy meeting. And so I'm not sure you want to tag on a budget workshop to that meeting. Maybe you can do it ahead of time. Come in at 5 and do it.
I can't.
I know that's why I'm looking at you, Mark.
Six? Did you do 6?
Sometimes. I mean, it's just, it's easier for a different night for me when I come in to do this, where you can actually sit down and go, okay, I don't have to run here at 95 miles an hour to get here. Chris works, I work. And sometimes I don't get back till 6 o'clock at night.
I work for the state doesn't mean I'm actually not out of town once in a while.
Where do you actually work? Your boss wants to know.
Well, how about the week of the... Well, you're not
Kevin, what week are you going?
I'm gone the week of the 12th.
Okay. Why don't we do it the week of the 5th?
Well, Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday is the best
the fourth
day for me.
I have open.
Tuesday's the best day for me.
Tuesday works for me.
I could do it like a 6 at Tuesday or for you.
Chris won't be there, why?
I don't know. See why I couldn't do.
Right. The Lions Club is more important than in town. I forgot about that.
May 29th. Community Center.
Right. No. Yes.
It's May. Budget meeting that night.
What night?
Which night?
He has to
go to a Lions Club meeting. Yes, he does. He thinks it's more important to go to a community.
Why don't we meet at 7 o'clock in the morning? Wouldn't that be convenient for most of you? I can meet any day at 7 o'clock.
Let me know how that goes.
All right, guys.
I leave Discovery Bay at 6:45 in the morning.
No problem. You guys, June 12th doesn't work.
It's a Saturday. I'm over here.
He's doing other things.
The problem with the week of the 17th.
Yeah, I'm going to Chaplain's Conference for the United States Army. That's a little more important than a Lions Club meeting. So if you want to get nasty about it, I can do that.
The week
There's
of the 17th.
35 people at a Lions Club meeting.
How about Monday?
Which third. Monday? The 3rd? Monday works for me, too. I'll make Monday work. 6 o'clock. Are you here, Kevin?
I'm available.
Can you hear the 3rd?
Sure. It's a ECCFPD meeting. On uh-huh. Monday of every month.
Where is that?
East Contra Costa Fire Protection.
Fire Protection.
How about...
We can get along without you on that one. How about Thursday?
But the Lions Club is more important. You see, you guys are freaking nuts.
How about Thursday?
I think the Lions Club Kevin could miss that, too.
I'll miss the Lions Club.
Yeah, I'm not going.
Yeah, I'll miss it again. That's okay.
There last one.
He was here, though.
No,
he was here for a meeting after the last
I went
meeting.
For you, Chris.
Okay, June 4th. I think we have June 4th. We now have a commitment on June 4th.
What about Thursday the 6th?
June 4th. We got
Thursday
it.
Thursday the 6th works
He's
fine.
Okay,
if
everybody agreed to the 6th. Why don't we just do the 6th
fine.
So
six
Chris can go there? Because I'll go to the last club meeting, too. I want to go.
It's a Thursday.
I will not be there on June 6th. The kids are out of school again. I'm leaving on vacation.
Oh.
I'm leaving for a month.
Can't you skip your vacation?
No.
Let's do the 4th then.
4th it is.
4th.
Okay.
You got it.
6 o'clock on the
4th. You could have done the 12th anyway.
What day of the week is that?
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
For a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're going live.
Call in.
No, I'm not going live.
I do. I'll just skip that one.
You never get the facts. That's the problem.
All right, so we agreed on the on 6 o'clock on
six
the 4th?
6 o'clock the 4th.
Go Carol on, sent us, please send
twice.
Us a notice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
please.
Sold
yes, for the
sir.
Yes. June the 4th, 6 o'clock. Okay.
Hey, we made a decision.
And that's all I've got, Mr. President.
That was painless. Boy, that was controversial. Why'd you have to bring up all
well,
this
that
controversial
was a lot.
Stuff?
That was painless.
1,800, you guys are telling me?
Well, let's get out of here.
That actually might make your meeting on the 5th a lot shorter, since we'll be getting into it on the 4th instead.
That'd be great.
So. What is this, a budget workshop?
Yeah, budget workshop. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay. Legal report?
Nothing, sir.
Perfect.
Thank you. Like the sound of that. All right. Update committee meeting center. We had, I think we were. Are there any community center updates?
We're meeting on the 29th.
Okay.
No, there's not really. Well, since everything's in constant change,
uh-huh.
And so therefore, I mean, things changed again this week. So we really don't have anything to report at this time. It kind of looks like I don't have anything to report.
That's good.
How's the pool coming along?
It's not.
Oh.
Oh.
I mean, it is. It's coming along fine. The challenge is finding staffing for it. Yeah. So, this is part of the
issue. I was thinking the pumps and stuff.
Everything's all the equipment is here. We're still waiting. We got hit by the county. Every county's different. We got hit by the county for a permit process.
Mm.
So we're submitting for a permit at this point. So it's delayed the actual work being done to the pool. That's my report.
Okay. Thank you. Any comments on correspondence?
It's lovely.
No public requests. Any future agenda items?
Not a future agenda item, but public request just brought something to my attention. Mr. Richardson has not been visiting with us because he was appointed to the Homeowners Design and Environmental Review Committee, which I'm the chairman. So I think we've got him out of our hair over here.
Wow.
However, he did send me
get ready
a request for some information about an email that some other people sent. Mm-hmm. I showed up at the meeting and he asked me, he said, didn't you get my letters? Why didn't you answer me? I go, I thought they were a bunch of BS. I didn't want to bother. So, anyway.
Get ready.
Anyway,
get ready.
I just wanted to give that good news.
All right.
Get ready.
Okay.
It starts.
No, there's
I can
reason. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Hey, are you still doing that?